I was talking to my father-in-law this morning, told him what I was going to speak about, which is the book of Ecclesiastes, and he said, you know what? He said, the book of Ecclesiastes becomes more important to you when you get old. I agree with that. I really love the book of Ecclesiastes because, you know, I was one of those guys that didn't grow up in the church. I came into church, I was baptized when I was 27. So I had all of that baggage with me when I came in. And, you know, I can relate to this book a little bit. Not of course, on Solomon's level, but I can do that. So I like to read it at least once a year. And I think I get a lot out of it. But and since it's, what, Super Bowl coming up in a couple of weeks, I thought I'd start out with meat in due season, so here I go. During the 2007 NFL regular season, New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady set the record for most touchdown passes, 50 touchdown passes in a regular season. And this was paving the way for his winning the MVP award. At the age of 30, which was, you know, 10 years ago, this, I'm quoting this from an interview. At the age of 30, so now he's 40 and he's still playing football, but he has already won 3 Super Bowls, an accomplishment that sets him apart as one of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game. In 2005, Tom Brady was interviewed by 60 Minutes journalist Steve Croft, and this is a part of this interview. Despite the fame and career accomplishments he had achieved already, Brady told Croft that it felt like something was still lacking in his life. Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it's all about. I reached my goal, my dream, my life, me. I think it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be all it's cracked up to be. Croft pressed Brady as to what the right answer was, and Brady added, "What's the answer? I wish I knew. I love playing football, and I love being quarterback for this team, but at the same time, I think there are a lot of other parts about me that I'm trying to find." Tom Brady is surprisingly frank about his quest to find the meaning of life. People today want to have a meaningful life. They have questions like, what is the meaning of life? Why am I so unhappy? Does God really care? Why is there so much suffering in the world? And I had a girl just slam me with that question, because I was trying to talk to her about it, and she said, you know, all these kids suffering, why? You tell me there's a God, look at it. Why is there so much injustice in the world? Is life really worth living? Is there a life after all of this? Now, you may have heard this. You may have heard these questions at some point in your life. And I think that maybe Ecclesiastes is the most puzzling and misunderstood book of the Bible. It's been called the mystery book of the Old Testament. I haven't heard many sermons preached from its pages. Quite frankly, I haven't. Ecclesiastes was written by King Solomon, who had a lot of opportunities to observe and experience this life thoroughly. He wrote this book after he kind of dove headlong into materialism, carnality, and idolatry. He got lost following his desires, and he saw his life evaporating into insignificance. Now, he's writing this book and he's looking back. He is repentant, and nearing the end of his days, he writes a philosophical book for exposing this kind of worldview of life. The title of the book refers to an assembly, which are Solomon's students. He calls himself the teacher or the preacher and writes about the logical and tragic outcome of regarding life as some sort of cosmic accident. Solomon offers his class only two options: a life of hopelessness or trust in God. Turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanities. Now, your Bible might read futile, empty, pointless, momentary, meaningless. The word literally means breath or vapor. The only other place this word appears appropriately is in Job. The Message Bible translates verse 2, "There is nothing to anything, it's all smoke." In the New Testament, turn over to James for a minute. James chapter 4 and verse 14. You do not know, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? James asks. It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. You're a mist that appears for a little while and then you're gone. James and Solomon weren't existentialists. I mean, they weren't denying any purpose or meaning in human life. They were just saying that life is empty, fleeting, transitory, and nothing matters without God. Solomon talks about this pettiness and stupidity of life. If life were nothing more than what we see under the sun, I'd like to begin by looking at the first lesson from Ecclesiastes. The preacher says, vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, or futility of futilities. All is futile, all or emptiness, emptiness of emptiness. All is emptiness. As you can see, the word vanity, as it's used in the Bible, has to do with things or life being empty or futile. Or as the Hebrew word is literally translated, a breath. In Ecclesiastes 2, verse 21, says, "For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. It is also vanity and a great evil. A man can work all day in the field or on a job or in a bank or on Wall Street, but then when he dies, another takes over, and he might not appreciate your efforts and might not take as good a care of those things that you accumulated." So in one sense, Solomon is saying that the things of this life in and of themselves mean very little. He's saying that the work for things, the work of work, in and of itself is really worthless and holds no value. Do you know anybody that's worked until they drop dead? just worked themselves to death or just worked until they couldn't work anymore. And then you hear about all of these people who retire after working 60, 70 years and they drop over dead 2 weeks after they leave the job. That is basically work for work's sake. But he says, when you see your work is pleasing to God, when you see that your work is in the praise and service to God, then it isn't in vain. If you do things, as the saying goes, and I've heard it, people say it in church, you know, work like you're working for God, then you can eat and drink and have enjoyment in your work because the purpose is different. In chapter 2, verse 25, it says, "For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I?" For apart from God, who can eat and drink and have any enjoyment? Solomon is saying that if your work and your effort are for God, then it has meaning and purpose. If your work is seen in connection with God, then we will have our priorities right. Our work will be shared with God, and it will be the whole consuming effort in our lives. For example, Solomon wanted to undeceive his readers against material goals as an end in themselves. And more importantly, Solomon wanted to drive his readers to despair. When you look at the first several chapters of Solomon, it's like, man, I can't believe this guy is saying this. But he wants to drive his readers to despair, to look at life, and then to God. So before we're ready to hear the good news, we need to understand the bad news. Our efforts to obtain happiness are futile, and our earthbound goals are meaningless apart from God. Solomon is saying that we can be distracted from what is truly important. Relationships, our relationship with God, relationships with our family, relationships with our church family, and relationships with the world. And if we're distracted, then our work is like a breath of wind, here 1 minute and gone the next. Chapter 1, verse 3. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? What do people gain from all their hard work under the sun? I mean, I've heard people say, what's the point of all we're doing? Why am I doing this? Striving. In a life lived without God, there is no gain, no advantage, no meaning. Verse 11, chapter 2, states, there is no profit under the sun. In other words, during one's lifetime. Imagine reaching the end of your life only to conclude that you accomplished nothing of value. Or Stephen Covey put it, I thought, pretty well. He says, I thought I was climbing the ladder of success until I found out I was at the wrong wall. There is no profit under the sun. In other words, during one's lifetime. Solomon could afford anything he wanted, but discovered to his frustration how nothing he could buy brought happiness. And Thomas Aquinas wrote that no man can live without delight. And that is why a man, that is why a man deprived of spiritual joy goes over to carnal pleasures. We need to appreciate pleasure that God gives us as a gift. not as a god. Solomon never said no to himself. He gave in to every impulse, devoted to the pursuit of happiness, only to discover he was chasing after the wind. So he was materially rich and spiritually bankrupt. The Detroit Auto Expo happened a couple of weeks ago, and I just caught a glimpse of it on Fox News or something like that. And how many people do you think attending that expo wish they could drive home in one of those cars on display? I mean, pretty nice cars. So there are car shows and boat shows, technology shows, Homeramas, and I've been to a couple of Homeramas, and I mean, you know, you're walking into $1-2 million homes with studios and everything. I mean, they've just got everything. And it's tempting when you look at that stuff to think a life of material prosperity might make someone happy. And it does for a while, but there's still an emptiness. And for a lot of people, life is just the pursuit of pleasure, which ends in one big letdown. Like Mick Jagger, they end up admitting, "I can't get no satisfaction. Apart from God, nothing will satisfy." Jesus said that gaining the whole world means nothing if God isn't a part of our lives. To quote another pop song, "Without God, we're all just dust in the wind." Solomon ran after wealth, sex, power, adventure, and knowledge, and he came up empty. But isn't that the point? It doesn't matter what we have now, because in the end, what really matters is a relationship with God. I'm not saying that we shouldn't work or to provide for our families, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive to do the best possible work we can. But what we are trying to point out is that the work, the stuff that work buys is in and of itself not that important. And what really matters is my relationship to God and my relationship to the people around me. Because as the preacher says in Ecclesiastes, apart from God, everything is vanity. And Martin Luther talked about vocation as a God-given gift. That what we do is a gift from God, so our doing is important. But it is the priority we place on our work we're talking about, or I'm talking about. Turn over to Luke. Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 16. And he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?'" How would you like to be in that situation? I have no more room to put any more stuff. So he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build bigger barns. And there I will store all my crops and my goods and I'll add to this my stuff. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this is your night. Your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.'" The rich farmer was more concerned about his wealth than anything else. So where is the balance in life? On one hand, we need to work. We need to take care of our families. But on the other, our families need more than a paycheck. We need something more than a paycheck. We need to develop sound relationships. The first relationship is with God, then our family, our church family, and the rest of the world. So it is only through God that my work or my enjoyment in life can have meaning and purpose. It's in that relationship with God, then, that I can be free to work, free to use the fruits of my labor to serve God and the people around me. It is in that relationship with God that I can be free to love and free to care, free from those bonds, if you will, of greed, to enjoy life and to discover the beauty of relationships, the joy of a person who truly cares for me as I am, and the thrill of knowing that when this life is ended, I'll be given a mansion for eternity. Back over to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 4 through 6. Solomon says, I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water and growing trees of the grove. Solomon did all of that stuff, and he records it. But you know what? None of it's there today. Not one thing. And if you ever wondered, what's it going to matter 100 years from now about anything? I remember a TV commercial, I haven't seen it in years, but it was where a stockbroker rose at like 4:30 in the morning, and he started checking his London and Frankfurt bank accounts and stock exchange results. And that drove himself ragged through the rest of the day. And he skipped lunch and did all of that. And the end of his life, what did he really accomplish? What have we done that will achieve any lasting profit or any kind of eternal significance? Maybe some of Solomon's despair came from, well, he kind of had a disastrous legacy. After four decades of peace, he handed over the kingdom to his son Rehoboam, who rejected the wise and counsel of the older men, and he got the counsel from the immature men, and the result was civil war and a foreign invasion. It might be likely that Solomon foresaw that tragedy because his son was unprepared and impulsive. All he'd accomplished was undone by the next generation. In chapter 3, verse 18 through 21, he says, I said in my heart concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them, that they may see that they themselves are like animals. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so does the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over the animals, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and shall return to the dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal, which goes down to the earth? So if there is no God, we're no better off than the animals. I heard that a philosophy teacher who really believed that this would warn his students not to take the logical steps of anarchy and suicide. So life apart from God is plenty to lose heart about. If you don't have a life with God, there is plenty out there. People today suffer from the results of their sins. Our air, our water, our food, they're all polluted. Even worse, our minds have been played with by a satanic superpower who wants to destroy us, specifically us. So is it any wonder then why people suffer from anxiety and depression? Because a life apart from God leads people to doing what's right in their own eyes, and the consequences lead to death. We learn from Solomon that God is free to be mysterious also. Free not to not work as we might expect. Free to be unpredictable at times. He's not limited by anything you think you know about him. Solomon is describing here a worldview without any higher power. On one hand, life will remain devoid of meaning until we seek God, or until he calls us. Ideals without God are nothing more than empty optimism or wishful thinking. And although this book was written for us, Ecclesiastes helps us to appreciate where I once was. And it reminds us of the anguish that we went through, the things that we couldn't understand, the whys in our life that we never understood. I think we can say with John Newton, who wrote Amazing Grace, I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. God gives meaning, God gives purpose, and God gives direction to our lives. When we know the plan of God, we start to know, or we begin to understand, the kingdoms of this earth and how they're going to be done away. We see that this isn't a random world governed by chance. When we know God, life begins to make sense. Turn over to 1 Timothy. First Timothy 6, verse 6, it says, There is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we shall be content. Is there a certain contentment about your life? A contentment that says, I don't have to work and work for an overabundance of things, but I can be content with a good living, or a fair living, or whatever your circumstance might be. If that's true, then we can spend time in quality relationships. With my relationship with God, and my relationship with my family and my friends. Am I content in knowing that my God-given skills are being used to further his kingdom through any service I might provide and through my giving, if I give? am I content in knowing that I don't have to take life so seriously? That I don't have time, that I have time to smell the roses, so to speak. So I just did an overview here of some of Ecclesiastes, but the purpose of Ecclesiastes is not to show the doubts or the skepticism of Solomon. It's not to record the complaining of a bitter person. It's not the story of a pessimist or of an evil man who's turned moralist. But it's intended to show that if we obtain everything we want, whatever that may be, whatever that is that you can think of, the hopes and the desires of this life, that they're not going to bring satisfaction. In contrast with the outcome of a higher calling of a godly life, we're shown that man was not made for this world alone and not for selfish achievement or gratification, but to fulfill the great plan of God for him, which he will accomplish through obedience and faith. Ecclesiastes shows us a man who lived through this process, and he came out on the other side with a wiser perspective. So when we're faced with the temptation to talk about life's unfairness or the why me syndrome, we can see Solomon's attitude in Ecclesiastes. We can see his mindset about life. Life is destined to remain unsatisfying apart from our recognition of God's intervention. It only remains to be seen whether or not we'll place our trust in his hands. I don't know about you, but I've struggled at times with misplaced pursuits in life. Does your life lack any kind of meaning or purpose or desire that you desire? We need to heed the words of Solomon so that they might encourage us to place our trust solely in God. Turn as the last scripture to Ecclesiastes 12. Ecclesiastes 12. Here's what he finally tells us, the end of the book. Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of mankind. For he will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil.